Welcome to the Awakening Church podcast. We pray this message encourages you and provides the hope and light of Jesus Christ. Thanks for tuning in.
Let me ask you, what word comes to mind when you hear the word family? Oh, wow, good. Family is, you know, fill in the blank. Family is maybe wonderful. Home. Beautiful. And I got you, love. Family is also painful too, isn't it? Messy. Complicated. Family is broken. And the truth of the matter is that often family can be all of the above, right? Today we're kicking off a series called The Dysfunctional Family of God. Go ahead and say that to your neighbor. The Dysfunctional Family of God. And we're going to spend the next 8 weeks unpacking and wrestling with this question. How do we break free from the cycles of dysfunction in our lives, in our families, and in our relationships? How do we break free from some of those patterns and habits and cycles that all of us have, both personally, in our families, and in our lives? And to do this, we're going to be diving back into the book of Genesis. Now, if you've been with us, what you know is that we've spent this year saying our theme is biblical literacy. We want to get into God's word. We want God's word to get into us. And to do that, we're laying a foundation and teaching through the book of Genesis. We started with Genesis 1. We did a series called Foundations because it's foundational for all of life. Then Genesis 2, we did this series called Unalone, the Secret to Human Flourishing. And then Genesis 3, we just concluded a few weeks ago, called Where in the World Did We Go Wrong? Now, today we're kicking off this series, The Dysfunctional Family of God, and we're going from Genesis 4 all the way through to Genesis 36. And we'll be taking just a big high view of it. But in Genesis, this is amazing. In Genesis, it tells the story of deeply fractured families. It's full of sibling rivalries, favoritism, betrayal, generational pain. And what's striking is that God doesn't sanitize or try to hide these stories, but he leans into the middle of it. One of the things that I want you to see throughout this series is a redemptive thread. As we dive into these dysfunctional families, God is at work in the midst of humanity's messiness and brokenness. Isn't that good news? Two of you, yeah. Oh, awesome. Like, I don't know about you, but I'm so grateful that God is at work in the middle of humanity's messiness and brokenness, because I'm deeply messy and broken myself. And as we'll dive in today with Cain and Abel, Noah, next week we'll look at Babel and Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, that he's in the middle of all that. And then we'll go back one more. And then he's also, personally, what I want you to walk away with this is that through this process, through these 8 weeks, that you would identify dysfunctional patterns and generational sins to bring the healing and wholeness that God desires for our lives. The goal of this series, by the way, is not to bash on our families. If you're old enough, you already do that with your friends. Isn't that weird that like the main subject of conversation becomes your family as you get older? Anyways, that's another subject, topic for another day. It's not to bash or shame your families, but it is to name the things that have been keeping us stuck so that we grow and break these cycles through the power of the Spirit of God. Okay, you with me? Leaning in? Yeah, leaning in. I know it's a beautiful sunny day. We're getting into summer mode. Here we go. You ready? Thank you. The first family, Cain and Abel. If you got your Bibles, would you open up to Genesis chapter 4? It's in your notes if you don't, or if you want to follow along on the screen. The first family, Cain and Abel. Adam and Eve had kids. They had many kids, actually. This is the story of their two oldest sons, and we pick it up in verse 2. Chapter 4, verse 2. Now, Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain, his offering, he did not look with favor with. Now, we're not told exactly why. What we know is it wasn't because one brought an animal and one brought some of the harvest. It could have been that Abel brought, you know, the first and the best, and maybe Cain brought what's left over. What we do know and see is there was something about a heart motivation of why Cain's offering wasn't accepted. Now, this is Cain's response. So Cain was very angry. In fact, we would use the word hot. That's the word in the Hebrew here, is hot. He got heated. He was PO'd. And his face was downcast. His countenance, you could see it all over his face. He's just like down in the dumps. And then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face, why is your countenance downcast? Now, if you do what's right, will you not be accepted? So there, you know already what to do. But if you do not do what's right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you. Sin is crouching like a tiger ready to pounce. It wants to have you. And he says, you must rule over it. Verse 8, now Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out into a field. While they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is your brother Abel? I don't know, he cried. Am I my brother's keeper? The Lord said, what have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. How do we break free from the cycles of dysfunction in our lives, our families, and our relationships? Now, Cain and Abel, the story of the very first family. And you thought your family had problems. The very first family was dysfunctional. Now, we could actually approach this from lots of different angles, and especially when we're talking about anger is one way. When we look at Cain's anger throughout all this, we're going to touch on this, but I've taught on this in the past. And in fact, part 5 in our Hello Life, the Apostle John talks about Cain, and we addressed anger again the year before in our controversial Jesus series. We talked about Jesus and anger. If you want a deeper dive on anger, I encourage you to go listen to those sermons. Today, what I want to do is actually lay a foundation from this text for the entire series. And I want you to notice something that is deeply encouraging and helpful. One is simply this: there are no perfect families. Would you say that with me? There are no perfect families. All the way from the very beginning, we see Adam and Eve, they sin in the garden, and then now they are passing on that sin to their kids. Why? Because sin infects every single family, and as a result, there is no perfect family. Why is that important? Because we tend to look around and think somebody else has it figured out. We begin to compare and we go like, oh man, that family, they got it all figured out. Or that relationship, they have it all figured out. We compare this. We look at the mom who's baking all the homemade, organic, Pinterest-worthy treats while you're bringing your kids granola from the bottom of your purse. Look at the dad who can make every game, every recital, school event, while you're just trying to watch on the live stream from work. We see that family that posts those perfect vacation pics. And they're in their matching outfits. How did they get their kids to do that? No meltdowns while you're just trying to keep your kids from, you know, putting arguing in Target's parking lot. The couple who does the weekly date nights and spiritual devotionals and post it online for everyone to see. They've only been married 6 months, but they're giving everyone good advice. The problem is we compare with one another. We look around. We live in a world where we believe they have it all together and I'm falling apart. Years ago, we had a friend, some friends who were like on that social media influencer stuff. You know what I mean? They're influencers. I don't know exactly what level you have to get to be called that, but that's what they were. And here's what was fascinating when you get like a peek behind the curtain of some of these influencers is what looks like a Tuesday. What looks like a Tuesday where, oh, you're just whipping up some things with your kids sitting over here and you're having this, you know, amazing, beautiful time as you restore and refinish this furniture and as you design this other way. What looks like a Tuesday is actually a well-crafted, well-curated, planned out months in advance. There's a chart. There's a videography team. Everything behind it. And all you see is their highlight reel and wonder why you're not able to do that yourself. And we compare our messy, dysfunctional, broken lives to everyone else's highlight reel. And the truth is, even amidst their highlight reel, there is no perfect family. Sin impacts it all. We have this pursuit of perfection then where I have to have it all together. We think, what will people think? We just don't talk about it. This idea of sin began in the garden. And if you study Genesis 3 and then Genesis 4, what you'll find is there's these incredible parallels. The author is wanting us to recognize that what happened in Genesis 3 got passed down, got transmitted, and is being replicated in their kids. That there is these dysfunctional cycles that get passed down through family lines. Because sin, ultimately, is the cancer of our world that perverts and destroys everything that is good and beautiful in this world. And the reason there's no perfect family is because we're all carriers of it. We're all messy. We're all broken. And the truth is, this is a little aside, is there's actually no perfect churches either. Some of us are on search for that perfect church that has it all, you know, kids programs exactly the way you need it. The sermon that's gonna, it's gonna feed me. I want it to feed me, Ryan. Like, feed yourself. Sorry. But the coffee, you know, I need that third wave Verve coffee at this church. The small groups, it's got to be, right? We set up a standard realizing, you know what? There's no perfect church. Why? Because it's filled with messy, broken people like me. I'm messy. And I'm broken. And you're, I'm sorry to tell you, you're messy and you're broken too. Covered in the grace of Jesus. See, we can't have a perfect family, we can't have a perfect church, but we can have healthy families. Those are different. The pursuit of perfection causes us to put on a front, causes us to fake it till we make it, avoid things and pretend, build an image that we have to protect at all costs, because if anybody saw the real you, then you wouldn't be accepted. But when you go, I want to be healthy. Well, health means you need to address things that are sick or that are growing, that you have conversations. Health means that actually your image isn't as important as really growing. And so how do we have and move towards health? That is what we're going to be talking about and unpacking for the next several weeks. But let me just give you one verse that has been so profound for me as just as a parent. Because I think when we talk about there's no perfect families, I know for me as a parent, I've heard so many as, you know, and I've been a dad now for 20 plus years. Like, I don't want to screw my kids up. And then you feel all this pressure, like that one thing, like is it that one thing? Was it that one word I said? Is it the one school we sent them to? Did I screw them up? This is my 40th birthday, and we're some friends, and we're just talking about our families. And what we realized was this verse, I think, is one of the most powerful parenting verses. Peter tells it in 1 Peter. He says, above all else, love each other deeply from the heart. For love covers a multitude of sins. There's no perfect family. We can't have healthy family. He says, well, sin is the thing, the disease that's creating the unhealth. What begins to cover? He says, love covers a multitude of sins. That conversation in my 40s was what we found is there was some families, some homes that created kind of a legalistic structure, that perfect box. We have to have it all figured out. And on the outside, people would go like, wow, they have it perfect. And on the inside, those who lived in it said, we're disconnected. We don't like being close to one another. We don't have relationships. And then there was other families. And on the outside, you're like, wow, it's pretty messy. The dysfunction was kind of out there for all to see, but the common denominator was I knew my mom loved me. I knew my dad loved me. And it covers a multitude of sin. I like the way my brother said it when our kids were little. He's like, our kids are going to need counseling because of my parenting. Parents, just know that. Your kids are going to need counseling because of your parenting. Why? Because you're going to screw up. I'm sorry. It's just true. He's like, my goal is to be friends with them and pay for their counseling when they're grown. There's no perfect family. Sin has infected every relationship. Love covers over a multitude of sins. How do we begin to infuse and live that out? Well, the truth is as a result, dysfunction is kind of our default state, by the way. It's our passed down heritage from our first family. Dysfunction is our default, but it doesn't have to be our destiny. We can move towards health. We can experience freedom and healing. God longs for it in your life, in my life, in our families. What was passed down does not have to be repeated. You are not a victim to what has been passed down towards you. Now, here, God does something amazing in this story. He acts like just, it's so good to watch God because like this is exactly how a great parent or an incredible counselor would respond. Remember Cain, back to Cain. Presents his offering, he's hot, he's white hot with anger. And God does two things. First, he invites reflection. Do you notice that? He goes to Cain, why are you so angry? Why are you downcast? Anger, by the way, is always a secondary emotion. You have to ask, why am I angry? We see it all the way in the book of Genesis, all the way at the very beginning. God's going, why are you angry? Look in, because you cannot address what you are unaware of. We need to reflect. Gary Chapman, in his book, Anger, writes this. He says, anger is fed by feelings of disappointment, hurt, rejection, embarrassment. I think Cain had all those. Disappointment, hurt, rejection. Embarrassment. Anger pits you against the person, place, or thing that sparked the emotion. It's the opposite of the feeling love, which we were just talking about. Love draws you towards the person. Anger sets you against the person. Notice that God invites reflection. What Cain was on the edge of doing wasn't, or what he was starting to do wasn't reflection, was rumination. Rumination is this inward self-pity cycle. Oh, poor me. I'm so sad. Or this, and you just begin to stew on it. You ever do that? You just begin to stew? You're not reflecting. Reflecting is identifying the source and building a productive response that is going to produce health. Stewing is, I'm just mad. How could they? My brother, what a jerk. Why did he have to one-up me? God, why has he got this, like, why didn't he accept whatever I had? What's wrong with him? You begin to ruminate. What's amazing is God, he invites reflection, but he doesn't let Cain stay there very long. You notice this? He asks the question, and then it's like immediately or just right shortly after. I don't know if there's like a pregnant pause there. We're not really told in the text exactly. He says, why are you angry? Why are you so downcast? And then God gives, what does he give? Correction. Well, come on, God, how offensive. Who are you to tell me what to do? Who are you to tell me how to feel? I'm angry. I'm hot. I have every right to be angry, and I'm going to stew on it, and they don't deserve anything. And then God, what does God say? He gives correction. He says, if you do what is right, God is pointing him towards health. If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? Like there's a path. You don't have to sit and stew and sit on your anger. See, anger is to be a signal that something needs to be addressed. It is not to be the steering wheel of your life. We live in an emotionally driven culture. Your emotions are important. They are a signal of something deeper in your life that needs to be addressed. It doesn't necessarily tell you all that's real or all that's true. I can be white hot with anger and I'm really mad at Abel. But the truth is, what I presented wasn't right. If you do what's right. He goes on and says, but if you do what not do what is right, sin's crouching at your door. It's that word. It desires to have you. And then I love this but, by the way. But you must rule over it. See, either my emotions will master me or I will master my emotions. Here's what's interesting is all the way back here, God says you actually have a choice. You're responsible for your response. There's a moment in time of clarity that you have been given agency and ability to choose this. You, Cain, and you, your anger or response didn't make you do that. You get to change what happened. Unfortunately, Cain didn't. This parallel is actually what the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians 4, where he says, in your anger, do not sin. In fact, literally the text says, be angry. Did you know that? That's okay. You can be angry. Sometimes we don't understand that it's okay to be angry. Be angry, it's just what do you do with it? Don't sin. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger and do not give the devil a foothold. Like when we stew and when we ruminate, we begin to open ourselves up to allow the enemy to take that and twist it and have influence in our lives and begin to be captive and break stuck in cycles of dysfunction. God provides, like a great counselor, correction. There are no perfect families. Dysfunction doesn't have to be your destiny. No. You didn't get to choose the dysfunction you were born into. But you do get to choose what you do with it. And in just a moment, I'm going to invite the band up to lead us in worship. But God invites us to reflect, and then he gives us words of correction. But the story of Cain doesn't end there. The story of Cain actually ends where he experiences the gravity of the consequences of his decision to stew and ruminate, let anger have its full vent and way, where he then brings his brother into a field, and out of anger, he murders him. And the consequences overwhelm Cain. And he cries out to God. And the text tells us that actually God puts a mark on Cain to spare his life. Totally unfair, by the way, because that's grace. God's grace meets us even when we blow it big time. As we begin our conversation around dysfunctional families and what's been passed on to us and what we're passing on, we have to get back to grace. Grace is, many of you know, it's God's undeserved favor, his unearned gift in our life. And it's more than that. Grace is actually God's empowering presence enabling us to do and be who we could not be or do on our own. It is his unearned gift, his undeserved favor. You do not, nothing you can earn it in this moment. Cain, everything he deserved was banishment, judgment, and yet God marks him and saves his life. See, God's grace can redeem what we wreck when we call out to him. And for some of us, as we step into this conversation, even as I'm talking about dysfunction, there's so many images and things that are flowing through your mind of this is what you've done and where you've been and the things that you've said. Maybe it's to a friend, maybe it's to a spouse, maybe it's to your kids. And it's like this dysfunctional cycle. Maybe it's a habit and a pattern in your life that just has taken you captive. And God's going like, when you cry out to me, I can redeem what you have wrecked. And then there's the other part of it for us. It's just not what we've wrecked, but what others have wrecked. That God's grace can restore what others have wrecked in us. And we walk through life, and maybe it was a parent, maybe it was a coach, maybe it was a spouse that was abusive, but someone in your life and the harm and the hurt, and you've been living in that weight as if it just set your future. The feeling of like, maybe I'm just damaged goods. God would never want me. Grace, God's grace meets us when we blow it big time and when meets us when others have wrecked it for us. When we call out to him. This song we're going to sing is called Came to My Rescue. I called. I called. I cried out. Let me ask you, when's the last time you cried out to God? I mean, just cried out to him. When's the last time, whether it's what's been done to you or what you've done, that you just get to the point where I'm just done and I can't handle it anymore? Instead of coping with it, you cry out. I called. I called. I called and you came. That's the gospel. It's the gospel for you and your family. That's the gospel for you in the midst of whatever you're privately going through. That's the gospel for you and your marriage. I called and he came and he answered, and only he can save. And so, would you cry out? Right now. Would you cry out? Would you not just sing a song? Would you pray a prayer? And would you allow his grace to meet you there? I want to just give you a moment, just to be still. You take a breath, close your eyes if you're comfortable. Would you just begin to name the dysfunction in the private quiet of your heart? It could be something that's been done to you that you've been living with. Could be a habit in your life. A cycle that's been passed on. Maybe you're a people pleaser, and so you're constantly living for others' approval. Maybe you're a perfectionist, and like you're just trying to get everything right, but you live under such guilt and shame. Maybe you're a workaholic that has been passed down through the family line, but you feel only as good as the next performance. What's your dysfunction? Would you name that dysfunction? Identify it. And then would you cry out? I called and you answered. Would you cry out, God, I need help. God, I can't. God, I'm tired. God, I've been coping. I've been numbing. God, would you show up? God, I need you. Grace, his undeserved, unearned favor. Grace is his presence empowering you to do and to be what you cannot do or be on your own. His grace for you.
We hope you are blessed by this message. Please subscribe to our podcast for access to every episode as they're uploaded. And hey, we'd love to connect with you. Take a next step by filling out our virtual connection card at awakeningchurch.com/card.